Good morning. It's just about time for us to get started with our class this morning. What we're going to be doing this morning is having an introduction class to the book of Judges. And so the plan for the next quarter on Wednesday nights, which are the dates here, on Wednesday nights in the auditorium class, we'll be going through the book of Judges together. And so the purpose of our class this morning is to do an introduction to the book, knock that out so that hopefully we can all have a good foundation to go on once we start our class in November. So that's our plan for today. I'll also have printed copies of the schedule on the table in the back. So if you remember to get one as you go, that way you have a printed copy. But I'll also ask David to forward an electronic copy closer to when we start, just so that you'll have one to consult. The reason why we're having that I lay out the verses ahead of time is because we're not going to use class time to read through the verses in Judges. Some classes will cover about 60 verses, and we just, instead of using our class time to read through the verses, I'm going to ask that you read the verses ahead of time or listen to them so that when we come to class, having read the verses together, we can have a good discussion. It'll also help because, like many Old Testament books, Judges is full of names and places, and you can get kind of bogged down, and don't get too bogged down with them, especially with the reading for the first class, this first chapter, because it covers a lot of what the Israelites failed to do in their conquest of Canaan. And it can be hard to see or understand where they're talking about, who exactly is being mentioned. So we just want to capture the big picture there. But anyway, don't get too bogged down in all the places and the names. As you read through, just try and gather the main points that are being communicated, especially about the characters that are presented. So that's our goal for the next quarter, again, starting next Wednesday night, November the 5th. I'm going to open it up, though, first and just ask to get your first impression on a couple of questions. First of all, when you think of the book of Judges, what event comes to mind? What's the first thing that you think of? Someone just want to shout one out? Okay, Gideon, he's and his 300 men. Okay, what else comes to mind?
What's that?
Jericho.
Specifically what? It relates to Jericho. Well, I think it's in Joshua.
Oh, sorry.
Okay. You're okay. But yes, I think Jericho is also mentioned in Judges. Yeah. Samson, he's the judge that's talked about the most and definitely is not a paragon of virtue. And we'll get more into that as we discuss him as well as the character of other judges who are not, in many cases, exemplars of the kind of attitudes and characters we should have. Okay? What? Y'all can see that, right? What character comes to mind, besides the ones that have been mentioned? Gideon, Samson, any other characters pop out? Who's that?
Jael, yeah, the lady who drove the tent peg
through Sisera's head, yeah. Very graphic. Who else? Keith?
Comes out through this, through his interaction with the judges and how he has the judges as leaders of the people.
Good response, Keith. And if you could see that, that's better. What quality of God comes to mind when you think about the book of Judges? Angel? Yeah, patience, definitely. What else? Someone else had a hand over here. Wyatt?
Deliverance of the people when they turned back to him.
That's right. So when the people cried out, he delivered them repeatedly throughout the book. Yes, sir?
What?
Yeah. Discipline, judgment, punishment, not just on the Israelites, but on the other nations that they should have dispelled in the first place, but also the ones that were still around them that affected them and afflicted them. And then finally, what spiritual takeaway comes to mind when you think of the book of Judges? Mercy? Who was that that said that? Sorry. Lauren. Yeah. Mercy, that God is merciful and long-suffering. Very good. What else? What other spiritual takeaway comes to your mind when you think of Judges? All right, we'll get to it. We'll just stop there. To put it plainly, Judges depicts a bleak picture, a sad, somber picture in Israel's history. This is one of idol worship and faithlessness, which required God, as has been mentioned, to continually intervene to both punish and then deliver the Israelites. How bad did it get in Judges? Well, we'll get into that. But if you turn to Psalm 106, turn with me to Psalm 106. And in this historical psalm that encompasses much of Israel's history, There are a few verses in here, actually a good portion of verses in here toward the end of the psalm, that talk especially about this period in Judges, when the Israelites were continually unfaithful to God, they had to be disciplined and punished, and then were rescued by God's deliverers, the judges. So you notice starting in verse 34 of Psalm 106, they did not destroy the peoples as the Lord commanded them, and then skip to 37. They sacrificed their sons and their daughters to the demons. They poured out innocent blood, the blood of their sons and daughters, whom they sacrificed to the idols of Canaan, and the land was polluted with blood. That specifically, to my knowledge, is not mentioned in the book of Judges. This comes later. Now, there was a lot of idolatry mentioned in Judges, and we know from other verses the kind of activities that the idol worshipers in Canaan took part in, including sacrificing their children. But we know here that this is something that the very Israelites started to do too, once they had assimilated with the people. So that's just how bleak and how dark it gets in the book of Judges. However, which other Old Testament book takes place during this period that is a bright spot, a note of hope and encouragement that it wasn't all bad? If you need a hint, oh, go ahead, Wyatt, you got it.
Yeah,
very good. So Ruth chapter 1, verse 1, in the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land, and a man of Bethlehem in Judah went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. By the way, famine was one of the promised consequences that God said, this will happen when you forsake me in the land of Canaan. And here we read in Ruth, during this period of time, there was a famine. And that's why this man and his family left Bethlehem and Judah to go to the land of Moab. So it wasn't all bad. There certainly were bright spots. But as we read through the book of Judges, there's a lot of bad stuff. There's a lot of graphic depictions of violence, and it gets really messy. The Israelites, at this point in their history, had been delivered from slavery in Egypt, and then, yes, sir, Larry.
What Testament book did you refer to?
Ruth. Yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. So they had been delivered from Egyptian slavery at this time, and then a lot of the book of Deuteronomy was warning. So turn with me now to Deuteronomy chapter 4. We're just going to read a selected few verses from Deuteronomy, a couple of chapters in Deuteronomy. If you want to, in your own time, read all of chapters 4, 11, and 12, and it's pretty haunting reading those chapters in light of what ends up happening in Judges. But for now, let's turn to Deuteronomy chapter 4, and we'll read together verse 1 starting. And now, O Israel, listen to the statutes and the rules that I am teaching you, and do them, that you may live and go in and take possession of the land that the Lord, the God of your fathers, is giving you. Skip down to verse 9, only take care, this is Deuteronomy 4, 9, and keep your soul diligently, lest you forget the things that your eyes have seen, and lest they depart from your heart all the days of your life. Make them known to your children and your children's children. And then dropping down to verse 23, Deuteronomy 4, 23, take care, lest you forget the covenant of the Lord your God, which he made with you, and make a carved image, the form of anything that the Lord your God has forbidden you. For the Lord your God is a consuming fire, a jealous God. Skipping over now to chapter 11, Deuteronomy chapter 11, we're going to read verses 18 through 23. Deuteronomy 11, 18, you shall therefore lay up these words of mine in your heart and in your soul, and you shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall teach them to your children, talking of them when you are sitting in your house, when you are walking by the way, and when you lie down and when you rise, you shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates, that your days and the days of your children may be multiplied in the land that the Lord swore to your fathers to give them, as long as the heavens are above the earth. For if you will be careful to do all this commandment that I command you, loving the Lord your God, walking in all his ways and holding fast to him, then the Lord your God will drive out all the nations before you, and you will dispossess nations greater and mightier than you. And then finally, same chapter, verse 26. See, I am setting before you today a blessing and a curse. The blessing, if you obey the commandment of the Lord your God, which I command you today, and the curse, if you do not obey the commandments of the Lord your God, but turn aside from the way that I am commanding you today to go after other gods that you have not known. So again, this is just selected verses from Deuteronomy about how repeatedly God warned the Israelites before they took possession of the land, be careful of the influences that are around you. Be careful of this idol worship. This negative influence will affect you. It will tempt you and draw you away. And that's exactly what happens starting in the very first chapter in the book of Judges. So now, coming to the period of the Judges, having just finished Joshua, which David taught on quarter before last, Judges itself covers a period of about 300 years, and it depicts part of this transition from the beginning of the Old Testament, where God's focus was on these fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and their families, to now what is more or less a tribal confederacy in the land of Canaan, eventually pointing to the need for a king. And that's what we're going to highlight in just a minute. As we get to the end of the book of Judges, there are two phrases repeated. I'll let you think about that before we get to them in just a moment. But now we're moving away from this smaller clan-like structure to a nation that came out of Egypt and now is inhabiting the land of Canaan. And it's important to note that the first event, at least chronologically speaking, in Judges, is actually mentioned in chapter 2 and verse 6. And there it says, when Joshua dismissed the people of Israel went each to his inheritance to take possession of the land. So this is a clue, by the way, that Judges is not a strictly chronological narrative. So as we read through, there may be some things that are mentioned later in the book that actually happened earlier on, like Joshua dismissing the people in chapter 2 and verse 6, and in chapter 1 and verse 1 of Judges, it says, after the death of Joshua. And so that just needs to be taken into account, that we're not reading a strictly chronological narrative here. And in this transition, it's important also to note that Israel's going from a time of relative unity, they had struggles, of course, under Moses' leadership and Joshua's leadership, to a time of assimilating with the peoples that they were meant to eradicate from the land of Canaan, and also the surrounding influences, the other nations that were still around, to, by the time we get to the end of Judges, there's anarchy and civil war. It's Israel against the tribe of Benjamin. So again, this is a downward spiral of Israel that happens during this time, which is very disappointing and sad. Now I want to highlight for you just two maps, which may not be real readable from where you're sitting, but the one on the left is the narrative that we get from the book of Joshua, which is what lands the different tribes were meant to inherit. And so you see borders here of Reuben, Simeon, Manasseh up here. So that's the land demarcations as they were presented in Joshua. The map on the right is, according to Judges chapter 1, what land the Israelites were actually able to conquer by the time that the judges came into play. And so you see, for example, Judah was meant to inherit all of this land to the coast of the Mediterranean Sea, but they were unable to or unwilling to, and therefore peoples like the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Philistines were left in the land of Canaan. These became a thorn in the side of the peoples of Israel, the people of Israel, and provides the foundation for, the impetus for their downward spiral into apostasy. And that is very plainly spoken of by the angel of God who comes to the people of Israel in the beginning of Judges chapter 2 and says to them, I will not drive them out, that is, the nations they were meant to eradicate completely, but they shall become thorns in your sides, and their God shall be a snare to you. So their disobedience and unwillingness to completely eradicate the peoples from the land of Canaan resulted in the rest of the book of Judges, which is continual trouble with these people, and their groaning and crying out to God for help, and then his deliverance of the people of Israel from these oppressors. Before we go on, though, I just want to stop and see if anybody has questions or comments about what we talked about so far. Wyatt?
You had said that 2 verse 6 may be the first thing that chronologically happens, but what about 1, 11 through 15? That's mentioned in Joshua.
Yeah, that's a good point. So we'll talk about that on the 5th. But a quick answer is that a lot of what's in chapter 1 is repeated from Joshua. And so the question becomes then, was Joshua, at the time it was written there, discussing it as already having happened, or was it still speaking of it as having happened but did not yet happen?
There's a figure of speech called prolepsis, but we'll get to that. So you may be right, or I may be right. We'll just have to figure it out. Yeah. And the big picture is, I don't know. Judges chapter 1 presents a fuller picture of some of these accounts, but I just don't know exactly in terms of the timeline. So, but that's a good point, Wyatt. All right, what did the judges do? And so when you think about a judge today, and this is an important distinction to make, what comes to mind? What's the first thing that comes to mind when you're talking about a judge today? Okay, resolving a dispute. Yeah, or solving a dispute. What else? That's right. Interpret the law. Make sure it's being appropriately applied in the case that's under consideration. Those are all good points. You know, I think of people in black robes, in courtrooms, everybody stands for when they walk into the room. The judges in the book of Judges are similar to that, but different. And we'll talk about that more in just a second. Back in Deuteronomy, we're not going to take the time to read these verses, but do jot them down so you can consider them later. In Deuteronomy 16 and 17, we learn that it was always God's plan, once the people of Israel inhabited the land of Canaan, for there to be judges located throughout the land. And they would be serving that judicial function. That's what's described in those two chapters. When there was a dispute or some other issue that needed to be resolved, the people would go to the judge or to the priest, and whatever the judge said was law, was what God's will was. And so it was God's intention for there to be these judges throughout the land of Israel, but once we come to the book of Judges, there's a little bit different picture painted of them. And in terms of describing their role, it really refers to one of two job responsibilities. One that we've already talked about, which is a judicial one, that is judging cases that were brought before them. And the other one that's more commonly seen is that of a military commander, where the judge was serving as a deliverer. So they were leading an army or a group of soldiers to go and rescue the people of Israel, or people of one tribe, back from their oppressors, whether it was the Amorites, Moabites, Philistines, whoever it might be. So both of these are found and used to describe both Othniel and Deborah, who are some of the first judges we read about. So it is said that they judged Israel in the sense that they heard cases, we can assume, and helped the people to resolve these conflicts, but also that they led military exploits. Most of the time, though, it is said that they were just military commanders. So that's what comes to mind mostly. It may be safe to assume that all the judges, I'm thinking of like Samson, for example, who battled against the Philistines a lot. At the end of his life, at the end of his story, it is said that Samson judged Israel 20 years. And so most of what we read about is Samson being a military commander, for lack of a better word, he himself fighting these battles to help deliver Israelites from their oppressors. But it may be safe to assume that he also did some of this judicial function. The NET version, instead of translating it judges, translates it leaders. And that may help us today just kind of capture what it is that these individuals were doing. That they weren't sitting in a courtroom wearing a black robe deciding cases. That they were leading the people in certain aspects, especially as it related to delivering them from their oppressors. It's also important to note that there are judges outside of the book of Judges. So even after we finish the book of Judges, the next two books in the Old Testament are 1st and 2nd. No, the next book is Ruth. And then it's 1st and 2nd Samuel. And there are some judges mentioned in 1st Samuel, like Eli, Samuel, and then even the sons of Samuel, Joel and Abijah, who were bad guys. All right, moving on now. Outline of the book of Judges. There are three main sections, just to keep in mind as you're reading through. First two chapters are introductory, so they're laying the groundwork for, as we previously mentioned, what ends up happening with Israel. So the ESV Study Bible categorized it in these three ways, and I liked it. So the first two chapters are the roots of Israel's apostasy, and then the majority of the narrative, chapters 3 through 16, is what we typically think of when we talk about judges, which is these stories of the different judges. And that is describes the downward spiral of Israel's apostasy. And then finally, chapter 17 through 21, the Study Bible categorized it or described it in this way, the depths of Israel's apostasy. And that's where we read about just some wanton, terrible acts of violence in those last few chapters, which ends up laying the groundwork for the civil war that ends up happening at the end of the book. And as I mentioned previously, at the end of Judges, there are these two phrases that keep on popping up. Did anybody think of them in the meantime while we were talking about other things? What two phrases keep getting repeated at the end of the book? That's right. Everyone was doing right in his own eyes. And what was the other one? Here's a hint. Oh, why? That's right. Yeah.
25, which you have there, is quoted, is repeated verbatim in 17:6.
Yes. Yeah. So that kind of starts
the beginning of the section and then concludes the end of the section. Very good. Of these last five chapters. So there was no king in Israel, and everyone was doing right in his own eyes. That phrase, everyone did what was right in his own eyes, is borrowed from Deuteronomy chapter 12 and verse 8. And in that context specifically, God was saying, right now, y'all are worshiping wherever and basically whenever you want to. But when you come into the promised land, I'm going to decide on a place and a time. And everyone has to obey that place and time for worship in the ways that are described in Deuteronomy chapter 12. And so now, by the time Judges rolls around, again, I think a good word for it is anarchy. Everybody's just doing what they want to do. There's no strong leadership. There's no nationwide, consistent, godly leadership. And that's one of the big takeaways from the book of Judges, is the need for such leadership. I want to mention, too, now at the onset, that in Judges, I think unlike any other book in the Bible, there are many graphic depictions of God's judgment. So one that was mentioned earlier was jail in Sisera. Even before that, in the third chapter, there's this account of Ehud and Eglon. And the writer, the Holy Spirit through the writer, goes to lengths to describe in detail what it took to snuff out this oppressor or these oppressors. Separate from that, which is God's judgment being enacted through the judges, through these deliverers, there are also some really stomach-churning depictions of violence and depravity that are given in Judges. And they're not easy verses to read, and they're not easy verses to reconcile. We'll talk more about that at the end of class this morning, and of course, when we actually go over those verses later on. But I think the big takeaway from all these descriptions, and especially the ones where it just seems like senseless and ugly violence and murder, is how desperate the situation becomes for people's lives without God. And it just brings to mind the two greatest commandments that Jesus clarifies in the New Testament when he was asked. He said, first of all, Lord your God is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. And the second is what? You shall love your neighbor as yourself. And almost the entire narrative in the book of Judges is violations of those two commands. Not loving the Lord their God with all their heart, soul, and mind, and definitely not loving their neighbor as their self. So just keep those in mind. Which, of course, I should mention, those commands were not new to the New Testament. They had been given before to the people of Israel from God. All right, I would ask for you to raise your hands if you've ever seen a picture like this when talking about the book of Judges. So the cycle that's depicted in chapter 2, which we'll cover in the second week of our class. But remember, it starts off with Israel rejecting God, that they reject God, and then that prompts a reaction from God, which he had already foretold was going to happen. This is how I'm going to react to you when you forsake me. And what he said was going to happen ends up happening with their oppressors. Of course, for some period of time, the people are under the oppressive hands of these foreigners, and they cry out to God, realizing the desperate nature of their situation. In some cases, but not in all, it said that they repent. But it's not like we read about in the period of the kings, where a righteous king would lead the whole nation in a period of repentance and sorrow for what they had done. It's not described that way in Judges. Most of the time, it's described as them crying out because of the situation that they're in. But as this cycle repeats itself and repeats itself, we see clearly that this repentance did not lead to sustained change on behalf of the entire nation. So God raises up a judge for them who rescues them from the hand of these oppressors, and then finally they relapse into the same situation that they were in before. And so remember, again, this is a period of about 300 years, and so we're reading mostly about the period of conflict, but it's also helpful to remember and note that there are many periods of rest that follow these periods of conflict. So, for example, just in chapter 3, after Othniel helped deliver the Israelites, in chapter 3 and verse 11, it says the land had rest for 40 years. And then later on in chapter 3 and verse 30, Moab was subdued under the hand of Israel. That's when Eglon was defeated, and the land had rest for 80 years. And so just remember, as you're reading through these chapters, that yes, there are these episodes of the people being unfaithful, needing to be delivered, but then there's also these periods of rest or peace that the land or part of the land was experiencing, and that's why the entire narrative encompasses about a 300-year period of time. But that cycle doesn't do justice to exactly what the entire book of Judges is describing, and that is, as previously mentioned, a downward spiral, and that's captured best in chapter 2 and verse 19, where it says, once that the people would return to God and follow their judge and be delivered, the next time it happened was worse than the previous time. So it's not just the cycle repeating itself, it's them spiraling down into a period of, again, anarchy and civil war by the end of the narrative. And so the successors were more corrupt than their fathers, so it just kept getting worse and worse. And to me, in reading the book of Judges, it's kind of like reading a story about a dysfunctional nation or family or organization that we read about commonly in our nation and elsewhere in the world. And by the end of reading about that situation, you think, someone really just needs to come in and clean this up. They just need a strong leader to come in and just take care of business, eradicate all the problems, help build up the good people that are left. And that's, I think, what we're left longing for by the end of the narrative in Judges is the need for strong, godly leadership. And indeed, that's what the very last verse points to, there being no king in Israel. Of course, was Saul the first king of Israel, the best candidate for leading Israel in a period of righteousness and following God? That's a rhetorical question, no. David, his successor, despite moral failures, was such a king. And David, of course, lays the foundation and groundwork for what other king that we read about? The perfect judge and deliverer in the Bible. That's Jesus. So I think, again, that's another big takeaway that I've gotten a little bit ahead of ourselves on, but that this narrative and judgment, just the depravity of people without God, points to the need for strong, godly leadership, and especially points the need for a savior, for a deliverer, someone who can rescue us from our biggest oppressor, which is Satan and sin. All right, before we move on to some observations, what comments or questions do y'all have so far? Yes, sir.
You talked about strong leadership several times, and I agree 100% with what you're saying. The one caveat to that is Deborah, right? And so for men who are supposed to be the leaders of the congregation, of their homes, it's good for us to take note of what happened there and how that circumstance worked out. And let us not be taken back by a woman who is unfortunately put in a place as Deborah was when that time comes.
Right.
It's our fault. It would be our fault. It's not Deborah's fault. It would be our fault because we failed to do the very thing that God would have us do.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Deborah was a prophetess, but also as a judge, and Barak was the military commander in that episode who God had charged with rescuing the Israelites, and she has to go to him and say, hasn't God told you to take care of this? And his response is, will you go with me? I won't go if you won't go. And she does, but she says, this victory is not going to be yours. It ends up being Jael's, another woman who takes care of Sisera, the commander of the army. So that's a great point, the need for godly leadership, and she stands, if I can comment on the character of the judges, where it's not explicitly stated in the narrative, she stands as the best one. But, Janet?
Very first line said she praised God that the leaders have taken the lead.
Very good, yes.
So she was highlighting how in that situation it had worked out how it was meant to. Good point. JR?
Well, someone had ended up the periods of rest versus the periods that they're under some sort of bondage or persecution. Do you have anything on that at this point?
Yes, so they were at rest longer than they had oppression. I can't give you the exact numbers. David has a slide that they shared with me.
Okay. One thing I haven't mentioned yet is that there was probably overlap in the period of the judges, and so, as we said before, it's not a strictly chronological narrative, and so it's likely that things were happening in different parts of the land of Israel and different judges were working at the same time. It's not explicitly told us in that way, but just probable that it happened. And so you just kind of have to take those numbers as far as periods of rest as a grain of salt. So that's the period of time that that part of Israel had rest, but there may have been trouble in the northern part, for example. Kaylin, do you have something?
I just want to make sure I'm understanding this correctly. So God's plan originally was for them to have judges, and then, you know, it keeps saying that everyone did what was right in their own eyes and they didn't have a king yet. But God also, that wasn't his original plan. Like, he seems to be reluctantly giving them that king, right? So in Judges, when it says there was no king and they did what was right in their own eyes, if I'm understanding correctly, it's not saying that the solution is a king, it's just that they did the judges thing incorrectly. Is that correct?
The solution that I think the book of Judges points to is the need for godly leadership. And that should have been, as for all the time in Israel history, is God as king. They should have always submitted to him and faithfully followed him, which they could have done if they had chosen to. But I think there are not conflicting messages, but it's a complex picture that's painted in the Old Testament in terms of the role of monarchy. So is it something that God desired or is it something that the people wanted? So you're right, he did make provision for when there was a king, but when the people of Israel in 1 Samuel ask for a king, Samuel's downtrodden by that, and God says, they haven't rejected you, they've rejected me. And so it's complicated, and I don't know that I have 100% nailed down his view on what he wanted for the people of Israel, but maybe by the end of the class I will. Sam?
Is it possible that the line of, and there was no king, is to help point the Israelites to where they were in their history, and that it was written after the king?
Yeah, that's a great point. And so my true vision was, we don't know exactly when Judges was written, but it probably was written in a time when there was king in Israel, and or kings in Israel and Judah. And so you're right, it was giving historical context for it. This is just what was going on in Israel at this time. It's not like it is today, where if this was going on today, and we have a king, there would be hopefully swift justice, and it would be taken care of. All good comments. Let's move on just for the sake of time. Maybe the slide's dim when it thinks I'm talking too much and not moving quickly enough. All right, so just general observations for your consideration as you read through these verses and as we study them together. So God is intervening in the book of Judges as he does elsewhere in the Bible and New Testament. His spirit is said to intervene and empower the judges to do certain things. We shouldn't necessarily conclude, though, that because God is intervening, that he is approving of the situation as a whole or disapproving of the situation as a whole. So, for example, in chapter 14, Samson's bane, the bane of his existence, was women. And he wanted a wife from the Philistines. And in chapter 14 and verse 4, it said that him marrying this wife of the Philistines was part of God's plan against the Philistines. So yes, God was working in that situation or was using this as part of his plan, but that shouldn't be misinterpreted as saying God approved of Samson's marriage to a foreigner, as an example. On the opposite side, God's silence does not necessarily mean his approval or disapproval of what's going on. I think especially as we read toward the end of the book, the issue or the event in Gibeah with the Levite and his concubine, which is just, again, utter depravity. And as you read it, you almost are screaming out that you want God just to take care of it right then and there. Just come down and wipe them out like he did Sodom and Gomorrah. But just because he's silent in that episode, as far as the narrative goes, doesn't mean we don't have other verses that tell us about how wrong those actions or activities are. We do have those other verses. And so we need a complete understanding of God's will in situations like that and not misinterpret
the narrative silence as saying, well, God was just standing by and doing nothing. That's not the case. Or rather, that he wasn't displeased with what was going on. And then quickly, is this class over at 40 or 45? 45, okay. Angel?
I think the important thing to remember here is that we're, even though God created us, he knows that we're free moral agents. And there's things that he, it's just like whenever he told Peter, he said, you know, I pray that he told him that he'd be tempted, but he was praying for him. He knows that there's going to be times that we mess up. And at times he knows exactly what's going to happen, but he's not going to intervene necessarily all the time.
That's a good point.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that out. Another observation, just as you're reading through, try and put yourself in the position of being someone, being an Israelite during this time who is trying to do the right thing, and just how difficult that would have been, but also how challenging it would have been to recognize the negative influence of the idolatrous nations in and around the Israelites. And then take that a step further and ask yourself, as I ask myself, how difficult it is for me, living in the world today and in the USA, to recognize those same negative influences that are around me and how they've crept into my life, maybe without even knowing it, and are influencing me in a way that's not to please God, but to please myself. As I mentioned before, God's people need godly leaders. Of course, as I mentioned, you know, in Judges, it's pointing to a time when they didn't have a king, but largely in the time that Israel had kings, they were not great kings. And this is a point I didn't bring up further. As bad as it got in Judges, was this the first time that Israel had been unfaithful and idolatrous to God in the Old Testament story? In the book of Judges? No, absolutely not. So it goes back, and was it the last time that they were unfaithful and idolatrous to God? No. And in fact, you could say it got even worse, because by the time, let me find it real quick, by the time that the Old Testament, as far as the nation of Israel as a whole, comes to an end, they had been so idolatrous that God led them away into captivity. So that doesn't happen in Judges. They're still afflicted by the peoples, but they're still in Canaan. So you could say it did and does get worse as far as the Old Testament story goes. As I mentioned before, worldly surroundings negatively influence us. We have to be able to identify those and work hard against those influences in our lives. And then finally, we have to take God's warning seriously. So we read some verses from Deuteronomy where he was very specific. God was very specific. These are going to be your challenges once you come into the land of Canaan. This is what you're going to have to battle against and overcome. They did not overcome. They fell to the temptation, and he enacted the promised consequence. And we shouldn't fool ourselves into thinking that something different is going to happen in our lives, that we can ignore God's warnings today and think we're going to escape the promised consequence in our own lives. So the goals for this class, just briefly with the couple of minutes we have left, I think it's important for us to all be clear on what we're trying to get out of our efforts here. So first, I want us to have a better understanding of the book of Judges and its place in the Bible story. As previously said, in the Bible story, these examples of judge deliverers, as imperfect as they were, point to the need for a perfect judge and a perfect deliverer, and that we have in Jesus the Christ. And so remember, this is part of the Bible story is pointing to man's greatest need, which is that for which is of a Messiah and of a deliverer. Also, as we talked about at the beginning of the class, the book of Judges gives us greater appreciation for God's character, that he is both just and merciful. That yes, he punished, yes, he allowed them to be oppressed, but he heard their cries and he rescued them from their sad state. Also gives us an increased knowledge of the divine perspective on human nature. So with all the violence and depravity that we read about in Judges, presents a somber and sad picture of life without God. And should be a warning to us if we want to try to live such a life without God, or when we see others in our lives, family, friends, coworkers, whoever it is, that are trying to live their lives without God, this presents what it looks like for man to do it his own way. And it is not a favorable picture. And then finally, our goal for this class is to learn to escape the same trap into which the Israelites fell. What do you think was the root cause of Israelites' faithlessness? If you just had to pin it on one thing, what would that one thing be? Sir?
It's something we mentioned already, and that's ungodly and weak leadership. At this point, Israel doesn't really seem to have a sense of nationhood. Nothing really uniting it, and they had leadership within that was falling apart right from the very beginning. For instance, the tribe of Dan, when they made their migration north, it was specifically for the express intent of going and worshiping a false god.
Leadership on a level of the nation, I would say, too, level of the family. And so what we read about in Deuteronomy was the need to teach children to know God and to follow God. And that's why we can get to chapter 2 and verse 10, where this other generation arose after them who did not know the Lord or the work that he had done for Israel. And so this was a failure either on the part of fathers and mothers to adequately teach their children and or for those children to take to heart the lessons that their parents were teaching them and implement them in their lives. John first.
My people are destroyed, not chastised, not booted out, destroyed for lack of knowledge. And I would say not just knowledge, but the belief therein. If you don't believe that the knowledge you're gaining is the ultimate, from the ultimate arbiter of knowledge and justice and all these things, you're not going to take the time to study. And that's the tragedy right there. If we lack the faith, i.e. that God is for us, who can be against us? Faithful enough to take action to be a diligent seeker of God, because he's a rewarder of those who diligently seek him, then we're in the same boat these guys were in, and we're being destroyed for our lack of knowledge.
Very good point. And so on that, I would say, did they literally not know who God was or Jehovah was? No, they would have had some familiarity with him. But it was lack of belief, the lack of traction with what they knew to be true, and how by not implementing in their lives, they were going to face consequences from it. So we just have about a couple minutes left, and I just want to put all these up on the board real quick, and then I'll open it up for comments. And so, again, we're going to have the schedule for the verses we're going to consider each week, so please, if you will, read the verses ahead of time, ahead of coming to class. I haven't mentioned this yet, but just being a Wednesday night class makes it different, at least for me, than a Sunday morning. So Sunday morning, I'm rested. Well, not now, but usually I'm rested. But Wednesday night, you know, being in the middle of the week, it's tough. And so I know that. I know probably you'll be on your drive to the building and remember, oh, we're studying Judges tonight. And so I'm cognizant of that, and I want it to still be a helpful class and let's not get too bogged down in all the details of Judges, but to have the takeaways. So please, you know, be prayerful. Read those verses. It's not a big ask in terms of your time commitment. Think about them. And then also, if you can, just jot down questions that you have about what you're reading or any other verses that come to mind. I think that's such a great aid to our study when others bring up verses either elsewhere in Judges or elsewhere in the Bible that help us understand better what's being talked about in the book. Okay, so real quick, for our next class, which is not this Wednesday, but next Wednesday, chapter 1 and the first 5 verses of chapter 2. So if you could read those before then, I'd greatly appreciate it. So with that, I'll stop and then ask, does anybody have a final comment or question? I know I had cut Ed off. You had your hand up. Didn't want to say anything.
It seems like it's just amazing. It just, the things that you'd mentioned, love God and love your fellow man, how from the bottom to the top leader, if everybody did that, how many... All the problems that would solve.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good point. Anything else before we stop? All right, thank y'all so much.